Going Linux, episode 449, listener feedback. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Bill.
Whether you are new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux.
We hope that you find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and open source applications and using them to get things done.
If you want to send us feedback, you can email us at goinglinux@gmail.com. And you can send us a voicemail by phone by dialing 1-904-468-7889.
In today's episode, listener feedback.
Hey, Bill, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Larry?
I am doing very well. So, I hear you're experimenting around with a few things on Linux.
I am.
Big surprise there. what's going on?
So I run Manjaro for a while and I enjoyed it. But I didn't put it on my main machine until, earlier this week. So I've put Manjaro Cinnamon on it, having a good time. And then I said, I got to get my gaming thing on. That's the only reason I kept Windows around for anything beyond, just letting it annoy me. I went ahead and installed Starfield, and now new game, AAA, great. And it's running so well on Linux. It's like, oh, I'm happy now. I don't have to use Windows at all. So
fantastic.
Starfield is running really, really fast, really, really good. And every game I'm using the Proton experimental from Steam. So it's running, like I said, they're just constantly adding support. And I just found out another one of my games I like to play, which I haven't messed with, is also run. So more and more games are not requiring Windows to run. You can run a lot of them on Linux. So I'm really, really excited. And I've been running Starfield. Yes, I'm a geek. And it's been absolutely flawless. I think it actually loads and runs a little bit faster. I don't think there's the overheads quite there. The only drawback, and it's not really even a drawback, is I actually had to wait maybe 5 minutes while it was building the Vulkan shaders. But I only had to do that once. But I had to wait 5 minutes while it was building it. And then after that, no problem.
So, I've heard from other gamers, not from personal experience here, but I've heard people saying they have to tweak the environment or they have to install a special kernel with low latency to be able to run games. Did you have to do any of that?
No.
Even better.
Nothing.
Install, click, run.
I installed Steam because I buy my games on Steam because I live in the middle of nowhere, so I don't need physical copies. And I told I wanted to install Starfield. It instantly downloaded the Proton, the experimental Proton, and some runtimes, and then downloaded the game and started it up, and it says building Vulkan shaders, and waited for about 5 minutes, and then the game started, and it's been flawless ever since.
Very nice. So to get Steam on your machine, you go to the Steam store and download Steam OS? Is that the way you do it?
Yeah, you would. Are you talking about if you're doing it from Linux?
Yes.
Okay, so Ubuntu, Manjaro, KDE, any of those main distributions, go to repository, type Steam, it'll pop up Steam. Just install that from your repositories. Once it's done, you'll start Steam. It will update with whatever updates have come since it was last, put into repositories. And then once that's done, you log into your account. And if you've already bought the game, you just go to your library and click it and say install and let it do the rest.
Very nice.
Yeah, it's not hard. I mean, it's like the same process that you would with Windows. Now, there's a few games that you have to tell it to force the compatibility, and that's as simple as right-clicking on the title and clicking the little box that says enforce compatibility.
Mm-hmm.
I've only had to do that once, but I figured, hey, if you have a game it's not listed as it can run, you would just see if that compatibility check is done. Once it is, I've downloaded a game and it runs just perfectly fine. It downloaded some runs. Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. There's no hardly any way I can mess it up. But it. But let me make a suggestion before you do that. So before you download any games to your Linux using Steam or whatever, if this is a new install, or even if it's an old install, make sure that your system is completely up to date with all the drivers and security settings, and security updates. Because if you have an NVIDIA card or AMD card or whatever, you're going to want to have the latest drivers so your experience will be the best it can be. So always make sure your machine's updated before you start installing games and stuff, just because a lot of times that will make things a lot smoother. Because I got a NVIDIA driver update when I did the updates, you know, so.
Okay. Now that's cool. Good. So which computer did you install this on? Is this on your gaming machine?
Oh, my game machine. I have no Windows installed anymore. It's okay. All Linux.
So this is, if I remember correctly, a Republic of Gamers?
No, this is a HP Pavilion gaming machine.
Ah, okay.
It has a, hang on a minute, I tell you, I was just looking at it. It's not the newest one, here it is, system information. So, it is the Core i7, 2.6 has six cores, hyper-threaded has 12. I only have 15 in this right now memory. I have a new Western Digital Blue SSD, NVMe drive.
Right. Okay.
The integrated graphics is, it comes with Intel Comet Lake HG2T2. It's ultra high D graphics, so I guess that's what it stands for. And the graphics card, the discrete is an NVIDIA GeForce GTX 1660 Ti mobile. So nothing super powerful, but it does work well.
Yeah.
Sorry, geeked out.
Yeah, that's all right, but that'll give our folks listening an opportunity to see what kind of hardware you're running. And if they're running anything close to that, the likelihood that they'll be able to run Steam is pretty good.
Yeah, it's the only thing I'm going to do now is I'm going to put another 16 into it, but 16 gigs of RAM. But other than that, I really haven't had any need for it right now. I'm sitting right now, I have browser tabs open, and I have Audacity and Discord and everything else, and I'm barely using 4 gigs of RAM on it, so it's pretty darn efficient. But yeah, yeah, I've actually was able to run the game on high, and it just looks stunning, and no hesitation or anything. So I would say, yeah, they got it pretty nailed down.
Very nice, very nice. Yeah, last time we were talking, your NVMe drive or your hard drive had crashed, and
yes,
you weren't able to recover it. So I'm assuming this is the new NVMe drive.
Yes, it is.
Okay, so yeah, because I remember last time you were working on a machine that was a little bit limited. You were only able to open 3 tabs on your browser, and it was struggling, but we got things recorded. Now,
yes,
it's a whole different story, right?
A whole different story. The drive that the HP used on this was, I'm going to say, not the highest quality.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still still looking up. It's some no name. I was like, where did you get this thing? So
well,
I was able to get a Western Digital Black, and for, I think it was under $100. No, it was under $60 for what,
okay,
I wanted. And it's been so much faster. Even I remember when it was new, I thought it was fast, but it is really, really fast now. So
mm-hmm.
I guess they just, you know, if you have problems with stuff like that, I guess you have to kind of say, yeah, they went with the lowest common denominator.
Yep, exactly, exactly.
That's why you should buy it from good, like System 76 or Frameworks or someone like that. Now, Dell's not bad, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know that I'm still using the XPS 13 from Dell that I got a few years ago, and its components, very name brand and high quality. And I got it with Linux installed. I think that's the one I got with Linux installed. So
mm-hmm.
I expected it to be able to run Linux, no problem. And my convertible laptop, the Lenovo that I have, the Flex 5, I just replaced the NVMe drive on that as well. Hey, thank you, Black Friday sales. I noticed that the original drive on it was a Toshiba.
Really?
I had no problems with it. It was just a little bit small for my liking. So I bought a huge one that hopefully will last me forever. I don't have a backup drive as big as the as the NVMe drive. And I got it from Crucial, and I've had no problem with it. Of course, it's only been, a few weeks, so no problem. And if you stick with the brand name for these drives, you should be good. That's for sure.
Yeah. Like I said, I don't know where they got this drive. It doesn't even have a name on it. I think it does. It's under a sticker, but it's like, no. So once I put this new one in, everything went back just fine. But that kind of leads me into something else that,
okay,
I wanted to talk about. So I had to, you know, since the NVMe drive went bad, I needed a way to get all the operating systems back on it. So one of our listeners, I don't know who it was, but whoever it was, thank you, Ventoy.
Mm-hmm.
Ventoy is a tool that you must have. So what Ventoy is it takes a USB drive, of thumb drive, and makes it where you can boot multiple operating systems off of it, and it is very easy to do it. You don't have to worry about burning things and making sure it's bootable. No, Ventoy handles all that. So what you do is you go to Ventoy. It's in the show notes. I think it's ventoy.net, and I think you're going to want to go, it should default, there's different languages, but it should default to English for you.
Mm-hmm. Or whatever your native language is. Yeah.
Yeah. So, It's an open source, but you'll download this image. I used Etcher, or you can use any USB burner just to make that USB bootable. Once you've done that, the hard part's over. So you'll boot into your machine like normal. Then you'll go ahead and stick the drive in that, because you're gonna have to load the images to your stick that you're gonna want to keep and run and install. So of course, I put Ubuntu on there. I put Windows. I didn't think it would work, but it does. I put Manjaro, Zorin, beta that they sent me to look at, and regular Zorin. I mean, I just put like 10 different ones. I put LXDE on it, XFCE, and also Ubuntu Mate. Okay, so I just kind of loaded it up.
Right. Well, to be clear, you and I have talked about this ahead of time, and
Yeah.
you're not installing those ISOs onto this thumb drive. You
No.
are just copying the ISO file to the thumb drive so that they're
That's
all
it.
there on the drive. Got it.
Yes. Until you realize that you don't have to do anything. You don't have to, because trying to burn a some of these like Windows can be a pain in the butt to get it to for the right image to let it boot. But Ventoy handles all of it. So once you've done that, you can use it as just a you want to look at different distros, so you download them, load them, throw them onto the, just copy and paste them or drag them to the USB stick. Once you've done that, you can just restart your machine, boot into your Ventoy stick, and it'll be a nice menu, and you just pick what you want it to load, and it handles everything else. And what's cool is if you just want to run something in the live session, just see if you like it or just whatever, it works fine that way too. You don't have to install. So you can look at stuff and you say, well, not for me right now, but I'll just keep it there. Or I need to, I'm having issues with my Ubuntu Mate. Well, hang on a minute, Larry. I can log into Ubuntu Mate using that Ventoy stick and, look at the same thing. So it's kind of. It's got, you can install from it, you can run live images from it. It's really, really nice. That it's definitely, I can't tell you how wish I would have looked at this earlier, because God, this is saving me so much work.
Well, that's something that I've been meaning to try as well and just haven't made the time to get it installed. It sounds really, really easy.
Oh yeah.
And from what we were talking about earlier, you can install to a hard drive, of course,
Oh yeah.
in your machine, but you can install to a virtual machine. You can install to, let's say you wanted it installed on an external hard drive, or even if you wanted to install and run from a thumb drive, you could do that, I would imagine.
Yeah, I haven't tried it from trying to install to a virtual machine, but when we were going over, we were kind of talking about this before the meeting. I was reading you all some of this. So I'm assuming that you can easily, just copy those images right over, which is would be nice if you're, running containers or you need something set up really quick.
Well, something to try out then.
So, sorry, that was my little tangent about Ventoy. Ventoy is really, really A plus. I like it a lot. And so, anyway, enough of me. This is supposed to be listener feedback. This has been Bill's feedback. Sorry.
Well, you're a listener too, so there you go. Okay.
Yeah,
All right. Well, let's get started with Phil's feedback then. He commented on Pop! OS and Wayland. He said, "Hello, Larry and Bill. This is generic replaceable subminion Phil from Iowa. I love the show. Long email warning, but I hope my experience might be helpful to others. I had a laptop from Dell, the 7480, that was experiencing random lockups. From what I read, Dell QC was spotty on these. I mistakenly blamed Pop! OS for my issues and tried vanilla Ubuntu, Zorin OS, and the KDE Neon to fix my issues. All behaved in the same way. Then I tested my RAM, replaced the fan and heatsink, tested my SSD. These didn't fix my lockups. After banging my head on the keyboard over the course of a few months, I started shopping for keyboard. No, for motherboards. I was intrigued by the fact that the Latitude 7490 had so many interchangeable parts with the 7480, including the top and bottom case, some models of the screen, keyboard, and battery. The thought of jumping two Intel generations for no extra cost was too tempting for this tinkerer to resist. $50 on eBay is the going rate for either motherboard. So I bought a 7490 motherboard with good return policy and made the attempt. To my delight, everything was plug and play with a quick BIOS update. Everything, that is, except the touchscreen connector had changed between the two models. However, I still did feel like Dr. Frankenstein, and I even did the laugh. I am thrilled that this worked for me because I couldn't find anyone who had ever tried this before. My Frankendell works perfectly and is rock solid. Now I have a good story to bore my grandkids with someday. Anyway, I hope I haven't bothered you or your audience, never Phil, with open source. Greetings to both of you, Phil. I also forgot to mention that switching from X11 to Wayland doubled or tripled my frame rates on some games. Codemasters Grid turned from a slideshow into at least playable frame rate. I don't have solid numbers, but it seems to me that on my low-spec system, Wayland makes a huge difference. Phil. Well, thanks, Phil.
Yeah, that is awesome, Phil.
Yeah, very much so. So interesting that Dell has two models, one generation higher than the other, that are almost identical.
You said two generations.
That's right. Yeah, 7480 to 7490. Well, is that one generation or two? But two generations on the Intel processor for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Good. Good for you.
That's pretty awesome. It'd have been a perfect 10 if that touch screen connector hadn't changed.
Yeah. I don't know how your soldering skills are or your micro soldering skills are, but you might want to try changing the connector.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
You know, how often do you really use the touchscreen at home, okay?
Yeah, so that's true.
I would suggest calling this one a win and keep on going.
Yep.
All right. So our next email comes from Biku, and he suggested Linux Antivirus. Hi there, Bill and Larry. In episode 443, Kendrick mused about antiviruses on Linux systems. My advice to Kendrick and others would be to avoid installing antivirus software on Linux, as it will do more harm than good. Enable firewall and reject all incoming connections, as a normal desktop user has no need and shouldn't allow any incoming stuff. You block Origin extension on your browser. Use email client like Thunderbird instead of webmail. And if you receive PDF and MS Office documents from other people before opening these documents, use an online service by Google called Total Virus to scan them. Do these things and enjoy your life and Linux. And then he gives a bunch of links. Biku.
Yes, thank you, Biku. Just to be clear, you said Total Virus. It's actually Virus Total. But yeah, that's fine. It'll be correct in the links. And yeah, thanks. I agree. There's not much reason to install antivirus software on Linux, especially if the only people you share files with are other people with Linux. But if you're sharing, like you said, PDFs or Microsoft Office documents, there might be a reason to install antivirus software, but that's going to, any of the commercial antivirus is going to bloat up your system with all kinds of stuff you don't need, and maybe even slow things down. I've seen it slow down my computers when I've tried to do that, and That virus total, I haven't tried that, but maybe that's something I'll try on the next PDF or MS Office doc that I get.
So what about ClamAV? You know.
Well, ClamAV would be the classic antivirus for Linux that you could install, and it's not a commercial antivirus, it's an open source antivirus. It'll do the basic checking for the most common infections that you can get.
Yeah.
But most of them will be Windows viruses because that's what's mostly out there. There are a few more Mac viruses than were out there before, and there are a few viruses that will infect Linux as well. But if you keep your Linux distribution up to date with the latest security updates, you should be covered there without any additional antivirus. But just on those files that you get, that's where you really want to check them, and that's where that virus total may come in.
Yeah, that's it. I also don't think I've run ClamAV, and I don't think if you have that installed, it's going to be that much of a hit on your system performance, unless you're super. I mean, I don't think it's going to do more harm than good, but then that's just me.
Yeah. Yeah. I think from my experience, and it's been a while since I tried it, ClamAV, so things may have changed, but my experience with it is it seems to be more designed for Linux servers than it is for the desktop. So I'm not sure how much utility you'd get out of it anyway, but yeah, if you just want the belt and suspenders approach, ClamAV is the way to go on Linux.
Yeah, I mean, it's the price is right, and you know, just get it from your repo.
Yeah, exactly. That price being zero. All right, moving on. George from Tulsa responded to several of our listeners' feedback, so we'll split this up then. Guys, apologies for going on so long here. Hope this is useful and not just pedantry. Pedantry? I'm not sure how you would emphasize that. Anyway, for Liz, I too am frustrated by the large amount of foreign language support that is part of a stock Ubuntu-based Linux install. For the record, I can read French and some simple Spanish. I'm not against foreigners or their languages. Vive la différence. Ubuntu and Ubuntu-based distributions include many fonts most users, wherever they're located, may never need. Liz gave an example of how that gets in a user's way in her complaint about the difficulty of using the character map application. That should be fixable. Here's a link on how to do that. And there's a link for remove most Asian fonts. And the text for that says, if you're not a user of Asian fonts, you might remove a couple of those. That should free up several hundred megabytes of disk space. But more importantly, the font selection box in LibreOffice will become much less cluttered. Liz also complained about the newest edition of Android. I think I understand her complaint. I have one of Google's phones, a Pixel 6 Pro. It recently updated to Android 14 and started warning that many of my favorite apps were developed for old versions of Android. The Dog Catcher podcast app I've used for years crashed so frequently, I decided it had become useless. Sadly, it hasn't been updated since 2018, and I've concluded it's abandonware. When looking for a new podcast app, I learned some of the top-rated ones either embedded their own ads or require paid subscriptions. I settled on AntennaPod, mentioned by Bill, because it is free and open source. I downloaded mine from F-Droid instead of Google Play. Even more ominous, in researching what to do about warnings, the apps I launch are out of date. I learned that for old stated security reasons, Google is blocking installs of old apps on Android 14. I'm able to run some of my favorites only because they were on my phone when Android 14 arrived. Were I to buy a new phone, I wouldn't be able to install them. So here's a link to an article about that, including a geeky workaround for those willing to try. And we'll have a link to the previous links and this one on how to install old apps on Android 14.
Okay.
On to you, Bill.
Okay, let me scroll here. So, George continued. He said, Jack asked if he should change what I think are internal NTFS drives encrypted by BitLocker when he gives up Windows for Linux. Clearly, he needs to remove the BitLocker from those drives if he is giving up Windows. And after he does that, he needs to copy what's on them to another backup before doing anything to his drives. Though, if they're old spinning drives, he might be better off shelving them as backups and starting fresh with new SSDs. I note Silicon Power 2 terabyte SATA drives as low as $71 on Amazon and 4 terabytes for $150. As to encrypting for Linux, I was recently working with a friend whose hoarder cousin bequeathed him a set of Windows laptops that range from Windows 8 to Windows 11, all password protected. When researching how to crack these Windows logins, I found many sites offering instructions on how to crack VeraCrypt passwords using brute force. Then there's just as many telling how to crack Lux encrypted ext4 disks. The longer and more arcane the password, the less likely anyone will devote the effort to brute force it. I prefer encrypting my secondary, internal, and carry around drives by formatting them ext4 with Lux encryption and using a painfully long but still memorable password. The advantage is that they can be mounted on any Linux system without first installing, then keeping VeraCrypt updated. It's, of course, extremely important to save such passwords in a password manager that's not only stored only inside the encrypted disk. Easy to do with built-in tools. Here's the screenshot from the Linux Mint disk program. My cursor arrow is right on top of the box to click password protected volume Lux. Isn't the advantage of VeraCrypt that it can be mounted on Windows and Mac as well as Linux? Formatting the carry around disk with XFAT would make it work best and most easily.
Yeah, VeraCrypt is certainly something, the encryption software you can install on Linux and Windows and Mac, but I don't know about reading across the file formats. I would expect so, but I haven't tried it.
Well, you know, Linux can read XFAT.
Well, sure, but the question is, if you've taken a file in, or you've got a hard drive that is an XFAT hard drive, and you've encrypted the file using VeraCrypt on that drive, could you look at the drive, use VeraCrypt from Linux, and read the files on that drive?
Oh, I don't know.
Interesting. Okay, George, you pose another puzzle for us to ponder. But George continues, and this time he's addressing you, Bill. Bill! And he's got like 6 exclamation marks. Scary, dude. You're talking again about distro hopping? How about trying them online rather than risking mangling your computer? Test drive 50 Linux distros online. That should keep you entertained. DistroC.com is the link that we'll be providing in the show notes. DistroC is an ongoing effort to replace the now discontinued DistroTesk that worked well enough to dissuade me from testing several distros on my own hardware. Cheers.
Okay.
I've heard of DistroC.
Hold on. I have. George, I tried it and it wasn't for me. Too slow. And I had to wait for sometimes, cause there was people in front of me, but it was cool. It's a very cool idea. I'm sure it'll get better. But I don't need DistroC now because I have Ventoy and a big old thumb drive. I just download them, throw them on there, and try it that way.
Well, that certainly sounds like a ringing endorsement for something other than what what he's suggesting. But thanks, George.
No, seriously, George, that was a really good site. I like to be able to run stuff on the computer, actual hardware, because, you know, you can't get a full sense of how everything's going to run unless it's on native or base hardware. It's a good idea that DistroC is good to see what it looks like and stuff. But I appreciate it. I definitely have to put that in my bookmarks because, you know, but every time I go, I always having to wait or it's a little clunky. I know it's a work in progress, so, but anyway, I'll shut up now.
No, that's cool. And to be transparent, I had tried DistroC after George had suggested it, and I found the same thing, that because it's online and because it's shared amongst users, you oftentimes have to wait for a virtual server to become available for you to try it out. So if you want to try it out yourself, and you don't want to have to wait, you want something that you can just have on your own hardware, I'm thinking that your suggestion, Bill, for Ventoy is probably the best we've seen so far.
Yeah, like I said, Ventoy is a real game changer because it's for me anyway, because I test so many things. Now I don't have to, you know, wipe or whatever. I don't have to find another USB drive. I just think it's a great tool, and it really opens up, you know, if you have someone that, especially that you're trying to convince to look into Linux, you can use a Ventoy stick to show them several different types, you know, from Linux Mint, Ubuntu Mate, you know, anything, any of those, you know, Manjaro, Fedora, you could have them all right there. And you could kind of show them what they can look for.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, anyway, I'm definitely a Ventoy fanboy right now, so don't mind me.
Yeah, we'll expect more to come from your experiences with Ventoy.
You're like, oh, God.
No, you've got me convinced to try it. So, I think that's the end of our feedback for this time around. And our next episode, if we're up for it, will be a year-end review, as is our tradition for what we do here on the Going Linux podcast. What do you think, Bill?
I think that is a great idea. Actually, I've already started working on it, but
your idea, yeah.
Yeah. So, but I do want to just ask anybody that has anything that they would like to bring up that's happened, whether it's been a positive, negative, any kind of experiences that you would like, you know, wins, losses, because we can do a year in review, but we want to do a year in view of all our listeners too. So if you've had any successes or anything like that, please send it to us so we can include it in the show.
And if you don't remember what went on this past year and you submitted something that you'd like to review and give us an update on, you can go to our show notes page at goinglinux.com/shownotes or shownotes.goinglinux.com, take your pick. And you will be taken to our show notes page and you can search for your name and see what you submitted in the past year. And I have found the first person who recommended Ventoy to us was Rosica, who had recommended it on our March 24th episode, number 405. And what year was that? It doesn't tell me the year. So
it should be this year. Look.
Yeah, it should be. No, it's not. Let's
what?
See, 405 was earlier than this year. Let's go back. let's see, 2, 3 years ago.
It was not that old.
Yeah, hang on. I'm going to find it yet. yes, 405 was March 24th, 2021.
No. Yes, it took me 2 years to finally get around looking at it.
There you go.
Who was it? Who was it again?
Rosica.
Rosica? Oh, I'm so sorry. You sent such a great one. I name you Super Honorary 2021, 22, 23 Minion of the Year for...
3 years in a row.
3 years in a row, because I am such a slacker. Thank you for sending that in.
Yes, thank you very much. So, if you want to review the show notes, there they are on our show notes page. And in the meantime, you can go to our website at goinglinux.com for articles and show notes, as well as links to download and subscribe to our podcast. We provide the website for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
And if you'd like, you can participate directly with our friendly and helpful community members by joining the discussion in our Going Linux podcast community on community.goinglinux.com.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
73.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.